Your home is more than just furniture. It's an extension of you. And even small details like a rug can completely change how a space feels. I love Ruggable because they prove you should never have to choose between a home that looks great and one that's actually livable. Our living room rug was looking a bit dirty lately, so we decided to get a new one from Ruggable. I was instantly drawn to their plush all-in-one rugs because I just love a soft texture, especially when watching TV on the couch. We went with the Finley Smoke Gray Plush Rug. It's really made our space feel so much cozier, and I love that you can just throw it in the wash when needed. It's been so much easier to keep this rug clean because we're often guilty of eating while watching TV, and we need a rug that suits our lifestyle. If you're looking for a high-quality look that's stain-resistant, machine-washable, and has built-in non-slip backing, then Ruggable is for you. Refresh your home with Ruggable.com. Get 10% off your first order site-wide with promo code POR at Ruggable.com. That's Ruggable.com and use code POR at checkout. Ever feel like there's just so much to do around the home and it can be completely overwhelming? When your to-do list keeps growing, TaskRabbit is ready to help. Just pick a trusted tasker and they'll show up and get it done. And taskers are often available to help the same day. I've been using TaskRabbit for years now. When my now husband moved in, we hired a tasker to create a gallery wall for us. And even just recently, we used TaskRabbit to disassemble and remove our old bed frame. Even now with a partner, it really saves us the anguish and sometimes arguments that come from doing tasks we don't really have a ton of experience with. You can search based on cost, skill set, availability, and past client reviews, so you know exactly who is showing up. When life happens, your to-do list grows. Get ahead of it now and get $15 off your first task at TaskRabbit.com or on the TaskRabbit app using promo code POR. Taskers book up fast, especially for same-day tasks, so book trusted home help today. That's $15 off your first task using promo code POR with the TaskRabbit app or at TaskRabbit.com. I'm Julie Krafcik.
And I'm Yue Xu. This is The Psychology of Relationships. Endings have a way of making us pause. And in that pause, there's an opportunity to better understand our relationship patterns. Whether you're in a breakup or reflecting on past connections, these moments can reveal a lot about how and why our relationships unfold the way they do. In this episode, we're joined by John Kim, licensed therapist, author of Breakup on Purpose, among many other best-selling titles, and host of the Angry Therapist podcast, known for his no BS approach to relationships and self-growth. Together, we break down the psychology behind modern breakups, from flat soda relationships that slowly lose their spark to the ambiguity of almost relationships that never fully take off. We explore what these dynamics reveal about attachment, timing, and emotional availability, and why they can be so hard to let go of. Rather than seeing endings as failures, this conversation reframes them as a catalyst for growth. We unpack how breakups can become turning points for self-awareness and what it looks like to move forward with more clarity and emotional insight. Remember to subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And if this episode shifted how you think about breakups and growth, we love a rating and review. This is The Psychology of Relationships, and you're listening to an episode that just might change the way you show up for love. Enjoy. John Kim, who is probably the coolest, angriest therapist I know. So happy to talk about your book that's already out.
It is out wide, and also, thank you for calling me cool at 51. I don't get a lot.
You're like the angry I can own, but the cool.
Yeah, I've been getting a lot of angry, but not a lot of cool, so I appreciate that. That makes me feel good.
We're so excited. I think like what Yue and I love about your work, you are able to take these times of life that often at times feel like a setback and use them as a catalyst for growth.
Yeah. After a breakup. Once the dust settles and you're ready to kind of examine the black box to see how the plane went down, there is so much growth soil. And if you try to find someone else as fast as you can, that growth soil will calcify because now you're in a new dynamic and things that you could have looked at and repaired and investigated, like that step is missed. And now you're creating something with someone new.
You really have a fresh take on breakups, which I really appreciate because it's probably one of my favorite topics, believe it or not. Mm. It's so great because we don't talk about breakups. We talk about heartbreak.
Yeah.
We talk about getting back into dating.
Yeah.
We don't talk about the act of moving away from a relationship. And you say, turn a heartbreak into a breakthrough. And so why do you think it's important for us to really turn our attention to the breakup itself?
Thank you for championing breakups, because I think you're right. We don't really talk a lot about what happened, you know, and I think there's different types of breakups. So one of my angles of this book is no one talks about how there's different types of breakups and what's prescribed based on the type of breakup. So for example, if it's a what I call a flat soda breakup, where the breakup was mutual, your healing from that's going to be very different than, say, a blindsided breakup, right? Where someone blindsided you. One day you're with someone, next day you're not. So I think not all breakups are the same.
Yeah. And you talk about like your kind of mother of all breakups, your divorce that you went through at length in the book. The D word. And we're definitely going to go into the different types of breakups later on. But I'm curious, like with the divorce, it clearly reset like a whole new chapter for you as becoming a therapist and being with your now wife. By the way, congrats. We saw that
your recent wedding
and, you know, your beautiful daughter. So like, how would you look at your divorce now that like got you here?
Yeah. When I went through the divorce at that time, I was 35, had no sense of self, was broke, had no sense of purpose. And I was a screenwriter, spent many years just kind of like punching keys at coffee shops. And the divorce kind of chopped me at my knees. And at that time, it was the hardest thing. Like, it was the worst thing that happened in my life at that time, right? The sky was falling. What am I going to do? My ex, I put on a pedestal and my life was, you know, revolving around her. It's like the sun went down. But now looking back, if it wasn't for that one event, because it completely repositioned me, I don't know what I would be doing today. You know, I don't think I'd be a therapist. I would still probably be a miserable fuck, which I which I was. It changed my life by forcing me to look at myself and reexamine my life. Like, I wouldn't have done that unless something that drastic happened to me, you know?
You talk about how in a breakup, it spotlights the parts of yourself that were buried in the relationship.
Mm.
But also, I would say not all of us going through a breakup choose to spotlight those areas. So what was it about this divorce breakup that motivated you to do the work?
I didn't really have a choice, because with the divorce, I kind of left with nothing. I had no friends. I had no money. I just went on Craigslist and found a roommate. And so starting there at 35, I didn't know who I was or what I was going to do with my life. But, you know, at the same time, when you lose everything, you have nothing to lose.
Right.
So it's almost easier. Mm. It would be harder for me now with, you know, like the whole picket fence thing. But back then, leaving, it was kind of a clean break. My first question was like, what do I do? How do I start? And I knew that it would be an inward journey. So I just started reevaluating everything, what I wanted to do, my relationships, what made me feel alive, just like, you know, one day at a time. But I really kind of like shook my life etch-a-sketch, which is dating me, I guess. But that's an 80s term that no one probably knows what I'm talking about.
We know that.
No, we do.
Oh, you guys know that. Oh, thank you. It's a toy that you, when you shake it, it clears the drawing and you can start over.
It's in the Smithsonian right now.
Oh, is it?
Wow. Yeah, that's why we know.
It's that. No, it's not. It's, I believed you for a second.
It's vintage.
Do you remember, like, was there any defining point, John, where you were just like, okay, I'm seeing now the beauty of this breakup?
Wow, that's a tipping point, you know? When you start to see beauty in the pain, that's such a great moment. That's such a great tip. I think I would say one of the things that is, I bought a motorcycle. I've had six now. And after my divorce, I said, I've always wanted a motorcycle. Everyone said no. All girlfriends said no. Parents said no. I was like, fuck, I'm going to get one real quick. And then it's going to come with me. Like, if I was an action figure, it'd be the package. Like, you can't separate us. It comes together in the box. So I rushed out and got this little motorcycle Ducati. And I would say moments on that bike, hugging canyons in Malibu, where I felt connected to the part of me when I was like 12, you know, I was ripping around with a bowl haircut and a strawberry shortcake t-shirt because my parents didn't know. I was like 10 and a little scooter. I felt so free in the 80s. It was my wonder years. And I connected to that part of me that I locked into a hope chest because life happened, you know? Mm-hmm. That's when things started tipping. So it was more of a somatic thing, not a logical thing, right? It was a felt sense in my body. And this is why I say that sometimes self-betterment is more about a reunion than anything else, because in relationships, especially marriages, long-term relationships, you start disconnecting with parts of you that you actually like or forgot about, you know?
That's interesting you say that, because I think about my last major breakup due to infidelity, one of your 8 breakups that you describe in your book. And I think there was a moment where I reconnected to my childhood. I remember being in Athens, Greece, and there was a hopscotch. Someone drew one.
Drew it.
With chalk.
Yep.
And I could not help but play on this hopscotch.
Mm.
And strangers walked by and said, "Do you want us to take video?" And I was like, "Yes, please. Please record this." And I do remember that moment being welcoming of this, like, 6-year-old self of that I kind of forgot about and swept away somewhere. And I felt really good after that. Something released in me.
Mm.
So it's interesting that you also kind of connected that to your childhood.
Yeah. I think a lot of us, we are in our solid self when we're children, before taxes, before we know what's cool, or before rejection, before pain. There's like a moment, and I think it is the wonder years. It is like 6, 8, 9, 10, 12, unless you're going through, you know, unsafe spaces and trauma and all that. There's like a purity to children. They're not exchanging truth for membership, and they are really in their solid self and not pseudo. There's a purity in that. And of course, we lose that as we grow up, you know? And so tapping into moments of that for me on 2 wheels, for you on 1 leg, but those are valuable moments.
I think what you were saying too about the sacrifices that we make in relationships. Like, I remember after my, you know, big breakup that we're going to go into, like that first one that really devastates you.
Yes.
I felt like I lost a piece of myself. And I think what you're saying of like, no one would ever let me get a motorcycle. I'm just going to do it. You know, and I think there is some of that that's kind of nice that you're like regaining sense of self.
Mm.
Can you look at any other breakups in your life outside of the big D1 that helped you propel forward?
I mean, every single one in a different way. One of my breakups, I left a relationship too soon. This is the relationship before the one I'm in now. We were together for 3 years, and I admit I blindsided her. There was a knowing at a bar. We were in Colorado, and we realized something's wrong, something's missing. The chemistry's changing. We should do something about it. Instead of going to couples therapy, instead of, you know, investigating, exploring, within 2 weeks, I was already kind of moving out. What that breakup taught me was that I was irresponsible and that I was running and I didn't do any kind of work. I pulled a John Kim, which is never saying bye to people at parties.
Oh,
I call it the Korean exit. I fucking left and I left. She had a lot of trauma in life. It triggered and activated a lot of stuff with her. And then she went into like a downward spiral. And then on top of that, I got together with a mutual friend like 3 weeks after I left.
Oh.
And then, of course, she thought, oh, this is why you left. You've been fucking cheating on me, which makes sense. So it like compounded that. And then now I was stuck with leaving a relationship and then dating someone brand new and getting pulled on each side. I had my first panic attack.
Wow.
And looking back, the big lesson for me in that is there's a way to leave a relationship that's responsible. And there's a way to break up that is not responsible. And that was one breakup where I was not responsible.
I think it hasn't led to a breakup, but I feel like sometimes when I have like things come up with my partner, I feel my instinct to go there also, to like run away from it. And I have to be like, this isn't really what I want with any relationship. There's got to be hard times. And that's not like the growth that I'm looking for. Like, it's actually harder to push through and to like confront stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I totally see that natural instinct. And I can see what from your story of if you were to experience that, that you did kind of throw in the towel with it, that you could look back and be like, oh, what was this revealing that I need to work on in the future?
Yeah. And also having something shiny in front of you, in this case, you know, another person, and then me feeling like desired. I like sort of came to that. I allowed that to be an excuse to not stay in something and work on something, but leave early.
Knowing what you know now, did you ever share this with her?
I don't think she'll talk to me.
Oh, okay.
I don't think she likes me.
She has to read the book to hear.
I guess I wouldn't either.
She will burn that book. She definitely will not contribute to buying any books from me. Do you guys wish that you can sit down with your exes and have any kind of conversation/closure? Or are you guys like,
yes,
fuck that, never again?
I feel like I was able to get that closure with my, like, I guess, most serious ex that we broke up, because we had a very open relationship. We're still in contact, even though it's not like a relationship of any sort. I've clearly moved on, and so has he. But it's more like I've gotten apologies from him years later, and we've talked. And like, it does help to some degree. And I think, like, I wish I maybe had it with like a couple other people. I feel like for me, I was like, I don't feel ill will to you, you know, and I think it kind of like frees you a bit. And I think they're actually this is kind of interesting, but it was like I was bringing a lot of the trauma from that relationship of like feeling like it was moving a certain direction and then kind of like, you know, got taken away from me and like sideswiped into my current relationship. And actually talking to my ex was able to like put that to bed and see how different my current relationship is.
Yeah.
So I was able to not bring that forward. So I think the closure was good in that case.
When you say open, you don't mean non-monogamy.
Oh, no, sorry.
Because you said open relationship.
What did I say?
You said something about an open relationship, how your relationship was so open. I was like, you know, that means something different these days.
Now she's clarifying. I meant like open communication. I was like, yes, open communication. I didn't even realize that came out.
Open communication is very different than an open relationship.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
John's like, that's an interesting result from finding closure.
Where is the story going?
So we decided to open. Yeah. Oh, that's so funny. Well, you know, maybe you didn't know, John, but we do have an offshoot podcast that we did a while ago called The Exit Interview, where we did bring on daters and three of their previous, like an ex or someone they've slept with or a hookup or a fling, to figure out what went wrong. So we could do a whole season with you if you want to. I mean, I'm just proposing that right now.
I would pay you if you can get my exes in a room with me. Maybe a couple would show up, but I don't think most of them would.
I mean, if we had a whole season of just John and your exes, that'd be amazing.
It'd be so entertaining.
A therapist trying to get closure from his exes.
Yeah.
I'd be very curious to know. That'd be so good. That'd be so good. You know, I do fantasize about this all the time because I am branding myself as someone who like mentally kills her exes after leaving the relationship. So I don't ever talk to any of them. But now I'm at a point in my life now where I feel like I could open that door. And what I wouldn't do is, I don't need closure. I don't think that's the purpose. What I would want would be feedback. I think being in an intimate romantic relationship with someone is so special and unique that your friends, your family can't see you in that light and they can't give you feedback in that light. So it'd be kind of fascinating for me to learn, what is your feedback from what you remember from our relationship?
It's sad that we can't receive feedback when we're in the relationship. It's only after the relationship has expired that we're like, okay, now you can give me the review. Now I'm going to listen.
10 years later, I'm ready.
Yeah, I'm ready to take it. I can handle it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think for me, the first thing I'd want would be to know that they don't hate me. And then even if we're never going to see each other again, I mean, you know, we're on this planet for such a short time. And then, of course, like you, yes, I would want some feedback on how I showed up and, you know, what I could work on for sure. It's valuable.
Let's hold that thought because we have a quick message from our sponsors. Okay, we talk a lot on the show about attraction, relationship dynamics, and why we fall for people who are completely wrong for us. And this book captures all of that. I just finished reading Behind Closed Doors by Shane Rose, and I could not put it down. It's so spicy, suspenseful, and genuinely addictive. So here's the setup. A woman's life gets turned upside down when danger finds her at work. And suddenly, she's whisked away to an ultra-private billionaire enclave as the live-in nanny for this brooding, powerful, impossible, magnetic single dad. Forced proximity, a secret society, and a hero who is protective, possessive, and very much off limits. The tension? Absolutely unhinged in the best way. As someone who loves studying relationship dynamics, this push and pull in this book hits different because it's not just romance. There's real suspense and secrets unraveling the whole time. It's think Desperate Housewives meets spicy dark romance. Behind Closed Doors by Shane Rose, book one of the Kept in Paradise series, is on sale now wherever books are sold in print and ebook.
You may or may not have known this, but we actually got our start with our podcast, Dateable. For the last decade, we've been studying modern dating, having thousands of conversations, hearing the patterns, and seeing what actually works or what doesn't. What started as honest conversations turned into something so much bigger. a book, How to Be Dateable, which was published last year with Simon & Schuster, is everything we wish we knew when we were out there dating. The mindset shifts, the patterns, the real talk no one else is saying. So if you're dating or you have a friend, sister, coworker, whoever who is, go grab a copy at howtobedateable.com or wherever books are sold. You can get audiobook, hardcover, or Kindle edition. Because being dateable isn't about changing who you are, it's about finally understanding how you show up.
Well, that's why I think breakups are so hard, because obviously if you're the one being broken up with, like, that is, you know, there's a lot of self-esteem and worth that comes with that. Mm-hmm. And then if you're the one doing the breaking up, there is like guilt in this feeling like you're a bad guy or girl or whoever. There was this quote that UA used to have like above her bed that was like, we're all each other's consequences.
Mm. I love that you're like, she had it above her bed.
You did.
Yeah, that's so interesting. Why was that? That was the mantra you woke up with? We're all each other's consequences?
Imagine every guy coming over.
I feel, oh boy. I never thought of it that way, but you did have it like right over
it's
your
little, it's
maybe
a little dark.
That's what was wrong.
I mean, it could be kind of kinky, but it's a little dark.
UA's like, why was I single during that period of my life?
Now I know.
We have just uncovered.
What made you put that banner above your bed?
I think it's because I had felt that everybody was carrying someone else into their current environment. Nobody came into a relationship a clean slate. Mm-hmm. So everybody's carrying a little bit of someone else right before them.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah.
So we're all each other's, right? Like there's residue from previous questions. So we're not coming in fresh, we're coming in stained.
Yeah. So I think finding that closure can like help you show up better for the next person too.
Oh, of course. Of course. Yeah. And also that review.
Mm. I actually found closure by just reading your book and reading about the different breakups. So I think, you know, whether you're going through a breakup or maybe you're not, I still think this book is super useful. I want to go into like four of kind of the big ones, and then time permitted, we'll go either further or we'll at least just address them.
Yeah, we probably can't hit the all eight.
Yeah. But maybe let's start with like the big breakup, that first true love breakup, because I remember just not being able to get out of bed, like literally being in bed and not being able to move. What happens with this breakup and why does it have such a big impact?
Well, I just want to point out real quick, and you said that you got closure by reading this book, and I love that you said that, not because it's my book, but
yeah.
I love the idea that you don't need someone else to give you closure, because if you do, you may never have closure. I actually think closure is kind of a myth. Mm-hmm. What happens is you have new experiences that kind of eclipse the old. You always remember, and sometimes we snap back and stuff and we play the highlight reel or whatever. I don't think anything is really just closed. It's not like, you know, the door's closed, never again. I don't go there and then I move forward. That's not how life is. Life is gray and there's, you know, I can't speak for you guys, but I'm in a now going on a 7-year relationship. And yeah, of course, I've thought about other relationships. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean I want to go back, but of course, I've played back, you know, the good, the bad, this, you know, sideways, whatever. So this idea of closure, I think, is misleading.
Mm-hmm. I'm really glad you said that, because like even when we were just talking about before, like reopening the door and talking to our exes, I think like for me, I had to find that on my own. The closure, like I didn't find that with my ex. I think maybe it was like a confirmation. Or like by the time we had that convo, I was like, had already found it. So I was able to just forgive and like move forward and let go a little. But I think I agree with you. Like we've talked to friends before and people on this podcast that like when you're purposely trying to seek closure from someone, you never actually get it. Like it's never the result that you're looking for.
Yeah. Also, it's exhausting. Also, it's powerless.
Yeah.
Also, it's a lot of expectation and crossing fingers and wishing and just anxiety provoking.
I did have a friend who had an interesting take on closure, though. She said, I don't think closure is about getting answers. Mm-hmm. It's about saying what I need to say, getting everything said to this other person. So she did write a letter to her ex. She actually read it to him out loud in person. She said, I don't need a response from you. I just want to say everything I need to say. And that was a closure she needed.
Oh, I like that.
Mm-hmm. The big one where you kind of compare all breakups to, usually they're associated with kind of our first love or when our hearts were powdered snow, as I talked about in the book.
Yeah.
You know, it's the, maybe not high school or the college. It's when we're in our 20s, usually, when it was our first big breakup. And one of the things I want to point out with this type of breakup is, you know, when you go back to like your elementary school and you see the chairs you sat in and you're like, look how tiny these chairs are.
Yeah.
And all the memories you have from that time, or maybe summer camp, the world was big. And, you know, you go to where you got into the fight or where you kissed someone or you wrote your name on the tree. And it just, everything seems so miniature or different, you know, as an adult. And I think we have to realize that the big one was big because it was like when we were kids, it was a very like new first experiences of love. And also when you replay it, you're not seeing that breakup through, you know, the 51-year-old you, you're seeing that breakup back through the eyes when you were 18 that summer or whatever. And so in your mind, as you're playing things back, they are still huge and emotions are big and it's life and death. And I think that's why they tend to linger. They become, you know, things that we carry for a long time.
Yeah.
So I definitely can see, like, the younger you are, the more experiencing this. Like, personally, I feel like I had some relationships prior, but they were never like that heartfelt, like, I am so in love. So mine actually, I feel like, hit when I was like 30 is when I like experienced that. So, like, I guess, like, can this hit later on, like, even if you've had past?
Of course. Yes. And I think that a lot of times the big one is probably the one that was the most unhealthy.
Yeah.
Toxic. My big one wasn't when I was 18. It was when I was 35. That was my marriage. That was the big one. And a lot of that, looking back, I didn't know it at the time, was very codependent, was enmeshed, was there was a lot of unhealthy dynamics happening in the relationship, which made it very what I call sticky. And that's why it was so big. And at the same time, at that time, I didn't have a life. So it was very big. The cliff I fell off was very high. As opposed to say, like, now I have a life. If a relationship didn't work out, the cliff wouldn't be as high. And it's not because I love her less or that the relationship is not meaningful. It means that I have more sense of self. I have a life. I'm not, you know, falling into an abyss of nothing.
Could you also argue that love becomes less potent or passionate as we find more independence in our lives?
Yeah, it's kind of sad, but love becomes kind of flat.
Well, not, love becomes, I guess, boring. That is really sad to say. But
that,
like,
is really sad. Yeah, no.
What's so beautiful about that big breakup is that you really felt this all-consuming love for this person.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could ever feel that way again. And I don't know if that's just like due to time or just because I've just become more solidified in my own person.
Yeah, I think that the lightning in the bottle that we've experienced early on, or maybe even later, that had more to do with dysfunction than actual. There is this kind of, like, I don't know, sometimes it's a trauma bond. There's something about the collision of two people with a lot of wounds that can be mistaken for passion and fiery and excitement. I mean, it's like makeup sex, right? It's like when, you know, it's all chemistry. That's very different than building a healthy, sustainable relationship with someone. And the healthy, sustainable relationship probably doesn't have the sparks. I mean, it has its own sparks. They're just different, you know? They're not M80s going off. They might be sparklers. I don't know. But
it's a good analogy.
But then it's kind of sad. I shouldn't say sparks. But then we think, like, oh, this isn't maybe the one, or this isn't as powerful, you know? But then we don't play back, well, then why did the other one end?
Yeah,
and what were those ruptures like, you know?
I think what was really good for my growth from the big breakup was that I think I never held this identity as, like, a girlfriend or a partner, because I considered myself, like, a later bloomer. And, like, some of my past experiences were more, like, one-sided feeling or casual or situationships, all that. So I think being in that first big relationship where I felt deeply and had the feelings reciprocated, it showed me that I could love and that I had the capacity to be a good girlfriend and do all the things. So I think that actually helped growth positively. And then on the flip side, showed kind of what was missing, like what you were just saying, of what I didn't want in my next relationship. So I guess, like, from your perspective, like, how can people reflect on the big one to actually help them move forward for the right relationship ultimately?
Well, the big one usually is so big that it makes you not only think about the relationship, but it kind of makes you evaluate your entire life.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times a big one is a leaving of a relationship where you lived together. It's life changing. And so not only are you leaving a relationship, but you're also considering, are my friends the friends I want? What do I want to do in this world? And you do a life audit after the big one. You know, I think because of that, the big one is significant. It's not just a chapter of your life. It can be an act break. You know, that's what it was for me.
I mean, it made me go to therapy. I feel like it's kind of propelled this podcast forward. There were a lot of things that it did. Yeah.
Yeah, it made me go back to school, become a therapist.
Right.
It did a lot of things for me, for sure.
That's great. What about this almost relationship breakup? I think this one has hurt me the most of all the breakups.
This one, people minimize. You know, it's like, well, you've only dated the person for a month. Like, what are you so sad about?
Right. Or you're not even defined. We always hear that.
Right. Yeah. But you guys weren't even together. I think the impact of a breakup isn't necessarily determined by how long a relationship is, because sometimes the almost relationship is more devastating than, say, a 10-year marriage where it was over, you know, 7 years in and 3 years, you guys are just friends, right?
Yeah.
But the almost breakup, which is really difficult about this, is not so much the relationship. There's that, and that might have been exciting, but what could have been?
Yeah.
So there's a secondary loss.
Yeah.
You know, you guys are talking about baby names, and like you paint this fantasy in your head because this is going so well, and it's only been a month, but you're like, oh, I could see myself in Italy with this person, and I could see what kind of house we would buy, and like this whole other world that's going to happen. And that's just us being human. Of course, we're going to fantasize and think about the future. And so that's gone. And that's what makes this so devastating, not just a 1 month, but what could have been.
Yeah, I think a lot of our audience could relate to this one because we're in the era of situationships and no one wanting to define everything. And then there's like this, it's almost like this shame that comes from it because, like you were saying, it wasn't a real relationship or we never defined it. And I mean, I've definitely talked to people that have been divorced and then they had this like 2 month fling, and for whatever reason that hit harder. And I agree with you, it's like this time and I think sometimes it's like the blindsidedness. I know you have another one of the blindsided breakup, but like there's something about like I thought this was gonna play out and then it didn't.
Yeah, which is devastating. It's the hope.
Yeah.
So how do you grow from it? Like if this happens to you?
Well, I think first you have to understand that why this is so powerful is because of all the stuff that didn't happen that you thought was, right? I think just understanding that grounds you and makes you realize, oh, everything that I'm losing actually never happened. It's kind of in my head.
Mm.
It doesn't mean that the collision wasn't real or the chemistry wasn't powerful. It just means that you're probably grieving the secondary losses more or just as much as what you lost. And I think understanding that puts things into perspective. And then you're like, oh, I see why this is impacting me so much. So I think that's step one, is just to realize that. There's something misleading about an almost relationship because society, friends, family are minimizing things for you and you feel kind of unseen. You feel like you're crazy. You're not crazy. You just put a lot of weight into, you've just been future tripping.
Yeah, totally.
You're not crazy. You just have distorted thoughts like everyone else.
It's the fantasy. Yeah.
The fantasy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
These relationships have hit me hard because I've always been the one to break up with the person because I realize it's a situationship that's not going to turn into a relationship.
Mm.
And when you voluntarily walk away from the future of what could, that is really devastating because it took me months to think, did I make the right decision? Could I give it one more go?
Yeah.
Is this something I did that didn't turn this into a relationship? It was a lot of what ifs.
Also, the guilt of it. I would rather someone break my heart than me carry the guilt of breaking someone else's heart, you know?
This one's such a unique one too, because like a lot of times when you're walking away from it, it's not because you don't like the person and you don't want it to be a relationship.
Yeah.
In fact, you do, but you just can see that it's not going that direction. And I think it's one of those weird conflicting ones that you're like, yeah, I can see the second guessing. Did I make the right choice? Is there someone better out there? Like, how do you get out of that mindset? Like if you in your gut think like this isn't going anywhere.
Well, I feel like if you know it's not going anywhere, maybe because two people have drifted too far to turn back or people are just becoming different people and you're just not aligned, there's more acceptance in that to me, even though it's probably more painful than what someone did wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? There's an acceptance when you're like, I love you, but we're just not aligned anymore. There's an acceptance there, and then you could get to grieving faster than you did something wrong. You need to fix it or you need to change. To me, the acceptance of an expiration to me is easier than betrayal.
So the next one, speaking of betrayal,
I know. It's like deep breath.
Perfect segue. You cheated, left me for someone else type of breakup.
Infidelity is probably one of the hardest, if not the hardest thing to heal from. Just doing a lot of couples work, such a small percentage of couples survive infidelity. And a lot of it is because the person that was cheated on holds that card up, or they'll say they have forgiven, but they carry it in the back pocket. And every time a fight happens, they just, look what you did. Remember what you did to me?
Yeah.
Remember who you fucked? Huh? So it just keeps rupturing. It's hard. I mean, I get it.
I actually find this one the easiest because I feel like the decision was made for me.
Yeah.
I can act with so much conviction now. When this happened to me, I thought, well, it's over. There's no conversation. There's no what ifs. There's no future. It's like, it's over now. Now I can act on the fact that it's over.
If someone cheats on you, is that an instant that it's over, or is there an investigation, or is it it's done?
I think in this circumstance, I was very surprised and maybe not surprised that my first instinct was it's over. I mean, there is absolutely no discussion. It's over. But also he didn't make an effort to stick around either. So that could have changed the scenario.
Yeah.
But definitely looking back, although it was like a painful stab, the wound didn't last as long.
Mm-hmm. It's easier to be angry than to just be hurt.
Mm-hmm.
I do see, though, the perspective, though, and I'm saying this not as someone that's necessarily been through it, but we've heard from people that, you know, it also carries like this feeling of like, what was wrong with me to deserve it?
Yeah.
Not everyone processes it that way. Like, I think UA, you were able to move past that phase, but I definitely know that hits some people. Like, how do you actually like flip the script on this and look at it as like something that's helping you and not necessarily like your fault that you caused the cheating to happen?
Well, I think a lot of cheating actually isn't even about the other person. Of course, we're going to take cheating personally. A lot of times people cheat because it's something that they're going through. It could be, I mean, anything from, you know, them not being happy in their lives, maybe a self-sabotage. I think, you know, when someone cheats on you, you instantly internalize, was I not enough? Am I not attractive enough? Am I not good in bed and all that? I would say most of the time, it actually has nothing to do with you or the relationship. It has to do with the person, their way of coping, their feeling inadequate, insecure, all of that stuff, you know? The story I just shared about 3 weeks after me breaking up with someone, I was dating someone else. So I technically didn't cheat on that person, but, and that had to do with me not feeling desired. And suddenly this very attractive, like, you know, the prom queen, if you will, gave me attention. It was within me, my insecurity and me wanting to feel desired more so than anything wrong with the relationship. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Where do you think the growth happens though, for the person that either experienced the cheating or maybe even the cheater?
The growth always happens in the exploration of self, why you cheated, where it came from. So once you go below the surface, right? So the cheating is what's on the surface. Where did that come from? Why did I do it? What was I trying to numb or seek, or, you know what I'm saying? Like, what hole was I trying to fill, if any? I think that exploration of self is where always, you know, revelations happen, growth happens, understanding. So it's not about just judging, blaming. It's about exploring yourself, your patterns, or, you know, all that.
Yeah, which is always the hardest part.
And also cheating can just be like wrong place, wrong time, you know, too much to drink and just a huge mistake. We're human, you know?
Yeah, kind of like going deep into, why am I feeling this way because this happened? What does it bring up for me? And what is that related to from my past? Those are all, I think, questions that I had to deal with in a very confrontational way that was a little scary to kind of like, you know, go back to the past and other experiences that I've had. But I just don't understand, and I will get to the fourth one too, but I just don't understand why for so long our culture preaches numbing the pain. It's like, you know, in all the movies and TV shows, so you went through a breakup, let's hit the bars. The best way to get over someone is to get under someone. Go to a concert, go to a music festival, go get lost somewhere, go do some drugs. Why is this so much like about numbing? Is that a way that was effective until we realized the long-term effects of that being not effective?
I think what you're hearing are voices from cheerleaders who don't really know, but they just want to make you feel good. So they're on the sidelines saying, go get laid, you know, go do this, go do that. I think they have good intentions for you, but they're not people that know what you really need. A lot of our friends are like this.
Yeah.
You know? Oh, you know what? You dodged a bullet. I got someone better for you.
Right.
But like, is that what you really need? And I think it's up to you to decide what you really need. And no one's going to give that to yourself better than you, you know?
I want to dive into this even more, but before we do, let's take a quick break to hear from our partners.
Staying present in a relationship might be really difficult sometimes because it's not just one date. It's every night on the couch, every meal, every, wait, what did you just say? Moment. That's where Brick comes in. Brick is a simple device that helps you put boundaries around your phone so you can actually be with your partner. You just pair the device to your phone and it locks distracting apps, and suddenly you're not half listening while trying to reply to texts or checking Instagram. Now, it's not about cutting out technology. It's about choosing presence during dinner, before bed, or when you're having a real conversation that deserves your full attention. Because relationships don't fall apart from one big thing. They fade from too many small moments of distraction.
If you want to be more present with your partner, check out Brick. Go to getbrick.app/PORshow for 10% off. That's getbrick.app/PORshow.
Well, I think, Yue, like what I observe with yours, I think you said this, is that your first instinct in the past would have been to book a trip and get out of town. But instead you were like, I'm going to sit with this. I'm going to look at what really happened here.
Yeah,
and
that's great.
Yeah, I think that like really propelled your growth. And like, I feel like you've experienced so much growth from this. Instead of taking like a victim mindset of the person that got cheated on, you were able to come out empowered. So I do think even in the worst of circumstances, like being cheated on, if you're wanting to find the growth, you can find it.
How long ago was this?
It was over a year ago.
Okay. And it's still kind of fresh. A year's not that.
Yeah, I think it's fresh in the way that I still think it's probably one of the best things to ever happen to me now that I'm saying this in hindsight. But thank you, Julie, for making that observation, because I do remember even the day I found out, I had so many friends offer for me to stay with them. Even my parents were like, come stay with us. And friends were like, you can stay with me as long as you want. And I think the old me would have said, yeah, I want to avoid the home that we shared at all costs so I can avoid all the memories and not be reminded. But something was calling to me to say, go confront it. Go reclaim your space back. And that's what I went straight home that day. And I mentally cleared him out of the space. And I sat there in the middle of my living room saying, this is my place. This is me. I get to write the rules now.
That's so empowering. I also want to applaud you running toward yourself instead of away. Running away from yourself would be travel, you know, I'm not getting the fuck out of it, whatever. And that isn't always bad, but instead you said, I'm going to do the harder thing, which is to sit with it, process it, look at it. You know, that's courageous, and I applaud that.
Thank you.
Okay, moving on to the last one that we want to dive in deep, because while the cheating one was UA, this was mine to the T, the breakup that never ends, or the on-again, off-again relationship. I was in one for 5 years with the ex that I mentioned.
Uh-huh.
But I think this cycle of breaking up and getting back together, it never felt like we actually broke up. Like, or it would, and then like that devastation would set in, and then like a couple months later, it would be like the same cycle all over again till you got numbed by it.
This breakup should be called the Chinese water torture.
It really is.
I always tell clients who say, should I get back together? My first question is, what's different?
Mm-hmm.
You know, is it someone's hair, mm-hmm. abs? Like, what's different? And if two people haven't internally really changed so much that it's two new people entering the space, creating a new dynamic, if that's not happening, there's a high chance what broke this will break it again because it's still there, mm-hmm. you know? And so just because people are lonely or because you miss someone is not enough for that relationship to then be completely new, because you have to lay new tracks.
Yeah.
You have to show up differently, you know, and two people. And so, yeah, that's going to take time. Two people have to go on a journey, come back and be different for any round two to have any chance.
That was a hard lesson that I had to learn, is that like love does not conquer all. Because I mean, I still truly believe to this day that like my ex did love me, but it was like there were mental health things, there were things in the way that just caused it not to work. And it's something that like I took forward, that I was like, of course I want to love my ex partner, don't get me wrong, but the foundation needs to be there. Like there needs to be more than just love. Yeah. Like I need to be with someone that's ready for a relationship and like committed to making it work, instead of just going on again, off again, the second it gets hard.
Yes. And I got to say, the try is honest, meaning there are a lot of people who they come back around for round two, they really give it their best shot.
Mm-hmm.
they really want to. There's just not enough has changed. People have not gone somewhere and come back.
Right.
Yeah.
I guess like the next ones just will touch on really briefly the blindsided breakup, the soap opera breakup, and the flat soda breakup. I love that one where it should have been coming for a long time.
Yeah.
I guess why do you think each of these deserve their own category?
Oh, because they're so different from each other. Mm. I just don't like, oh, you're going through a breakup.
Yeah.
Blanket statement. Like, you know, what you went through with the infidelity breakup. It's so different than, say, if you had a friend who's like, oh, I just went through the same thing. Yeah, you know, we broke up years. We broke up. Yeah. The relationship was dead years ago and it was mutual. They're just different animals. You know, it's cats and dogs. And everyone tends to just say a breakup is a breakup. And here's what you need to do. The prescription is usually the same. But it's like, if I broke my arm, that'd be very different than, say, if I had head lice or something. That's really
You're right. Two very different things.
How do you know you have a five-year-old without saying you have a five-year-old? I don't know what about it. Lice is one around.
But apparently head lice is a thing.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point because I get so irked when people try to compare their experiences with mine because everybody knows what you're going through is inherently so different than what someone else went through. But I know people are trying to be empathetic and they're trying to, you know, show you that there is light at the end of the tunnel. But
yeah,
sometimes I just need my friends to be like, this sucks. Like, this really sucks. I don't know what you're going through, but I'm here for you.
I think one universal theme of all breakups, I really love the way you put this in your book, that instead of looking at it as a breakup, it's reframing it as an expiration.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why do you think this is so important to do the reframe?
Some people don't like this because they're like, you're comparing, you know, my relationship to milk. But for me, it's helpful because there's an acceptance. I could accept that something has expired. It wasn't meant to go a day more, but a breakup seems traumatic. It seems someone did something to me. There was this huge, you know, it's like chaos. An expiration sounds peaceful. There's sadness, but it's not puncturing, you know? I like it. It's helped me with all my relationships that have ended to think that it's an expiration, not a breakup.
I mean, I think the expiration is so key because it at least makes it seem like you're now moving into that next stage of life instead of getting stuck in the breakup.
Yeah, I was on Armchair Expert once and Dax Shepard disagreed. He had a big problem with me calling. Yeah, and he's like, I don't, you know, and he was about to say why, but then I don't know how we got on this topic of me having sex with a plum when I was 12.
What?
Which is
how you distracted him from disagreeing with you?
I just mentioned side that I had sex with a plum when I was 12 because I was so curious. And I knew it wasn't, I knew it didn't feel like an apple pie. I just knew that even at 12. And once I said that, he was like, okay, this is what we're going to talk about. And then he totally forgot to tell me why he didn't agree with me calling a breakup an expiration.
It's the mystery still to this day.
Fuck, I was like, what? And I was so open to it. Like, I mean, I don't know what he was going to say. Maybe because, I don't know, but I was like, I was so curious, like, why? Yeah. Why does that bother you so much? I'm assuming because it's minimizing to the relationship, but we start talking about me having sex with a plum.
So. I mean, I don't even know how to
take away.
I was going to say, there's so much from this conversation. Where do we even go after the plum incident?
It's on his podcast. It's deep. It's 2 hours of me talking about that. So
okay. Well, we'll link that in the show notes for people. Like,
we're going to title this episode Sex with the Plum just to get the views up.
Let's leave that behind.
Yeah, we'll leave that in the past. Over. That's expired, UA.
Did you have to break up with the plum?
No.
Which type of
break? That was a very quick relationship.
It was the almost relationship. Oh, my goodness. I think this has been such a great conversation. It's so helpful. I mean, whether you're in the thick of a breakup, unfortunately, December to January is breakup season. So people might be in the thick of it. Yeah. But I think what I've gotten from this conversation and from personal experience, it may not seem like it in the moment when it's happening, but it usually ends up being like a blessing in the sense of you either realize this was not the right person for you, or it's that thing that propels like major change and growth within you. So I love just all of what you were saying of how do we start reframing breakups and how do we start examining ourselves and how we contributed to any of these. And then also know that like no one breakup is the same. The having the eight different types, I think is super helpful for people because one, you don't feel alone of what you might be feeling that's unique to your breakup. But then you can also see like if something happens and also how much growth you've had. I think when I was reading the book, I'm like, oh, I had the almost breakup at this stage of life, the big breakup after that. So you can kind of see in that sense, too, of how everything builds on each other and eventually gets you to the type of relationship you want as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
My key takeaway is I actually think this is the perfect book for anybody who's single right now. Because so many times people are afraid to date and put themselves out there because of the fear of breaking up. We don't talk about breakups because we're fearful of the heartbreak. But if we have an almost academic approach to breakups and know that there are so many different ways to come out of every type of breakup, we have a game plan now. So now we don't need to be fearful because we know what's on the other side. There's now a game plan for each type of heartbreak you may experience. So I would highly actually recommend, it sounds weird if you're single and reading a book about breakups, but there is something really nice about removing the fear of finding out someone's not right for you. And then where do you go from there? I do want to warn anybody who gets your book, though, if you are a partner up, you may just want to warn them before you read the book or like pick up the book. Because I had your galley on my coffee table and my partner came in. He's like, break up on purpose.
He's like, something wrong.
He's like, do you want to tell me something? Do you want to have a conversation?
Yeah, the title's a little misleading. I totally sold that as an author, which is the On Purpose franchise. But break up on purpose doesn't mean to break up on purpose. It means break up kind of with purpose and reflecting on your breakup. It doesn't mean just to destroy relationships. That's not what the book's about. So yeah, thank you so much, guys.
This was such a good conversation. Thank you, John, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much, John. And where can we find out more information about you and your books?
If you go to singleonpurpose.life, I have built a brand new community for people who are trying to connect to themselves first. So it's like-minded singles and just tons of workshops. And I'm in there doing two lives a week. Go to there. And then in the show notes, we'll put a discounted link for you.
Awesome. And then assume you can get anywhere?
Books wide, anywhere. Yep.
Awesome. Well, definitely pick up Break Up on Purpose. It was a great book.
Thank you.
We'll link everything in our show notes. And thank you again for being on our show.
And if you haven't done so yet, subscribe to The Psychology of Relationships today so you don't miss an episode.
Bye.